Blog Talk Radio.
It's already done.
It's the Pressure Points Unpacked podcast with host Tyra Little. We're live Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. This show deals with personal and community issues by getting to the root cause and causes on an open and raw level. We're unpacking emotional, spiritual, mental and physical topics that influence and often control us. Get ready to unload, examine, and process. Let's get unpacked on Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, and welcome to Pressure Points Unpacked, where we are transforming Tuesdays spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. I'm your host, Tyra Little, and my co-host for the month of August is licensed professional counselor supervisor, Shamique McPherson, who is the founder of Clear Vision Counseling, and Elder Shepherd Drayton Jr., who is the missions pastor of New Refuge Church in Pauli Valley, South Carolina. Today, we're going to talk about the grief variation, how men and women grieve. So today, because I have experienced traumatic grief as well as Elder Shepherd, along with some other grief issues that we've had, we normally give you guys a whole bunch of statistics, but today we're not going to do that. We're just going to have an open discussion where we're going to talk about, from our perspectives, how things have worked in our life. So let's get unpacked. Shamique?
Hello, everyone. I hope everyone is having an awesome week so far. I know it's only Tuesday, but I'm certain that our week feels like it's already Friday. Tyra, again, I thank you for allowing us to have this open conversation to really dig into grief and the impact that it has on so many of us, especially after we have been thriving and trying to survive through this pandemic. I think this conversation is necessary. Mm-hmm. For so many people, because I think over the last year and 18 months, we have lost so many things, not just yes. people, but a sense of normalcy. Our children mm-hmm. are also, you know, losing a lot of things in the process. So I think this conversation is very poignant right now. So today we are going to really dig into exploring how men and women differ in their grief process. I thought it would be interesting for us to really not just dig into statistics, but to look at how the experience has impacted a male and a female. And ironically, with you, Tyra, and Elder Shep, we have two people that have experienced grief in a significant way. And being that you guys are different in gender, I just wanted to dig into understanding the different perspectives and experiences and help those who are listening who may be male and struggling through their grief or female and struggling through their grief to give them some insight into how you dealt with your grief. Tyra, just for those who have not really know your whole story, can you give us just a little bit of background of the things that you have discovered through this process that are your grief-related issues?
Wow. Okay. Well, I will start by saying immediately after my son was murdered by the police, there was a conference that I was in, and there was a lady that was speaking. And when I heard her talk, everyone has the right, so don't get me wrong because I'm not judging her, but I can only say that what I heard from her, it was a place of anger that it seemed like it consumed her differently. I'm trying to formulate the right words to explain what I saw, but I can truly say I know I did not want to be her. I wanted to be able to still do the things that I needed to do and to make a difference in a way to where you have a right to be angry, but I needed to be able to function and to help other people, because I feel like anything that you go through, it's not just for you. It's to help somebody else to push through. And so immediately I knew that I had to go into counseling. And the beauty of this conversation today also is that I went through counseling with dealing from another perspective through the VA, but then I also had a spiritual guidance in the counseling component. And ironically enough, it was Elder Shuck. Who actually handled that part of the counseling for me. And in one of the early shows that we've had for this month, one of the things that I said that to me, when he made the statement to me, it hit home in so many aspects for me. Like I came in one day and he asked me, he said, how do you feel today? And I told him crazy. And he was able to explain to me that the reason being is because you're three parts. And so when all three parts are grieving at that one time, like, you get that feeling of feeling crazy. And I've been able to utilize that in every aspect of my life. So in different things that happen, I'm able to actually go back to that. And so for me, that was a powerful nugget for me. As I was doing, and one of the things when it comes to this and dealing with counseling and just going through this process, man, I found times where I was really, I didn't want to do the homework. You know, angry because you just, I'm trying to get the right words here, Shanique, just to kind of just explain, because, I mean, you know, as a mother, I as a parent, I feel like no one should ever have to bury their children. So that in itself was just really huge, and it still to this day, I mean, I go through a different range of emotions, but I think that I'm at a place to where I can try to help to guide someone else. So right now I feel like I'm kind of babbling. So I'm going to turn it back to you. I don't know if I actually answered your question, but yeah.
Well, you did. You see, when I asked you of all your grief-related experiences, the one that sounds like it's the most impactful was your son's murder. And like you said, no parent wants to have to bury their child. So, you know, on the male side of things, there's a couple of things we can pull out there, Eldership. Can you give us just a little bit of background and insight into the things you've discovered through this process about your grief-related issues and your grief and loss?
Yes. Thanks, Shanique. Thank you, Tyra, for having me on again. From the male perspective, you know, what I found is that, you know, of course, dealing with the trauma of losing a child is you know, the pinnacle of the issues. But then as you start to try to settle yourself and settle your mind, you start learning more about you as a person and what triggers you. And for me, I realized that my frustrations were always at a heightened place. But also my compassion and empathy was at a heightened place as well. I could watch a movie that involves anything around grief, and by the end of the movie, I'm in tears. It was always a place that saddened me, but because my emotions are just under the surface after my experience, I find that, you know, I'm my compassion and empathy is at a heightened place. And from the male perspective, what I realized in the process of all of this is that females tend to, when they talk with each other, they have conversations about themselves, you know, what I cook today, what I'm wearing to this particular function, what's going on in my family, what the kids are doing. And men tend to have conversations about exterior, outside things, a football game, going fishing, not really about their emotions, so to speak. And I think I found myself in a profound place of loneliness because normally men release their emotions to their wives. And if the wife is going through the same thing and is already crippled by the grief, then as a protector, he tends to hold on to it, or I did. I tend to hold on to the emotions that I was feeling. And, you know, if I cried, I cried alone. And so that because I didn't want to put any more weight on her, more weight than she was already carrying, and no more weight on the children as well. And so I realized that there's a profound loneliness as it relates to grief for men while they're going through the process of grieving.
And, you know, you highlighted some very important differences between men and women. And it's strange that, like, you're bringing kind of, like, what you know clinically and therapeutically to the forefront in your experience, because that is a very true statement. Men tend to do more of an internal process when it comes to grief. They minimize their feelings. In outward expression, men are not going to typically go to support groups and discuss, you know, how they're feeling. They will, you know, sit alone and reflect on, you know, how they're feeling, but they don't manifest it to their wife or their children, because that takes me out of protector mode, and it puts me in the position of vulnerability where they have to protect me, and I am the man, so now I'm not protecting them. So what you just described was like what we really often see when it comes to the dynamics between men and women and how they grieve. So I guess, you know, transitioning from
Let me say something right there, because I'm listening to what you're saying, and what I found was I mean, you know, this is going to take me back to a place, but what I realized also I know that men and women, like with the setup that he just said, like about the protective mode. But you know what? For me, when you're dealing from a single parent, right, at the time, wow, I had to do that very thing, because what I found myself doing is, you know, I could never cry in front of my youngest son because I had to be strong for him. You know what I'm saying? The same for, you know, with my mom, I'm being strong for her. And then when I think back about, because this thing was heavy for me, because it was like a double whammy, because 4 months prior, my oldest son had gotten sentenced. And so I'm having to be on the phone with him, explaining to him what happened to his brother. And then when I go see him, I can't sit there and cry because he's locked up. And I'm having to even explain to him, look, it's not that that this doesn't affect me, but I can't cry in here with you because I don't want to, because I have to leave you. And I don't want to leave you in a space to where now you're worrying what's going on out here, you know, and you're back here. Man, that's whoa.
It sounds like what you just described was compartmentalizing your grief. You had to find convenient times to process it. And it sounds like you said that you sought out therapy right after the incident happened. So, you know, your convenient time to grieve was in therapy. And it's important to note that, you know, this is not always going to happen. Like, men are not always going to grieve the same way. Sometimes men will grieve openly, emotionally, and then sometimes it flips where the women are the person that internalizes it a little bit more and processes their emotions internally. So it sounds like because you were in a single parent situation, you had to compartmentalize your grief to the convenience of what everyone else around you needed. But I wanted to kind of shift and kind of go back to Elder Shep here, because Tyra said that she immediately sought help for her loss. Being that you are spiritual therapist, you know, so to speak, did you seek help after the loss of your daughter, Elder Shep?
Not initially. Initially, I put it on the back burner. I felt like it was something that I needed to see everyone else through at first. But I did eventually seek counseling, and it was very, very beneficial. But initially, I felt like I needed to make sure that everyone else was okay, the wife and the children. And then initially, I didn't want to talk about it because as a protector, when something like this happens, you feel like you failed. And so conversation was like a reminder of my failure. And even though there was nothing I could do, and I did everything that I could do, in rearing my daughter, but when something like this happens, it's like you're not there to protect them. And so every conversation felt like a reminder that I failed. And so I think that's initially why I didn't want to seek counseling and get in there and really get down to some core things that was going on internally.
Mm-hmm. And you know that you highlight more things that are different between men and women, because you shifted to kind of like what Tyra did, where she made her grief about the convenience. Her grieving was convenient in certain spaces, and it sounds like you did the same thing, because as the protector, you did not see the convenience in grieving before your wife and children. So you kind of, you allowed them to go through the grief process, and you took a back burner. Is that kind of like the approach you took?
It's exactly the approach I took. Because watching them go through was very painful to see for me. And, and just like with losing the child, there was nothing I could do about it. And then at the same time, watching them go through the grief and not be able to do anything about it was very painful. So I wanted to see them get as much help as possible. So I did take a back seat to allow that to happen.
Yeah. So you shifted into what most men do, right? Like if I tell my husband, I can say the simplest thing to him, and he immediately shifts into how can I solve this problem. So it sounds like that's what you focused on, was let me solve this problem for the family.
Yes.
And solving the
yes.
problem is let's help them grieve. And that's kind of yes. like, it's just how men process certain things. They see themselves as protectors and problem solvers for their family. So the problem is, okay, let's manage this grief situation. Let's get the women and children in first and let them do the grieving, and then I'll come behind and work on my stuff later. And so it becomes that convenient compartmentalized thing. But also, another thing that you highlighted was the fact that, if you did it before them, you were going to feel guilty about that. You know, because typically those are the two primary emotions that men are going to dig out first, which is, they're going to be either angry or they feel guilty because I was supposed to protect, or I should have been there during this situation to prevent this, or if I had done. So it's very, very similar to many men's experience in this process.
I had both.
Go ahead.
I had the anger and the guilt. But the other thing I had a lot of was nightmares. I had nightmares for a long period of time. And they were interesting, because even though they were nightmares, in the dreams, I would see my daughter, and even though they were nightmares, I was grateful that I had them, because it was an opportunity for me to see her, even though it was a dream, and it wasn't a good dream, but I was able to see her in the dream, and so I thought that was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what we talked about when we were discussing traumatic grief. The nightmares was a part of the trauma process. you know, it's how the brain responds to trauma. You have a nightmare or memories about certain things, and it seems like you put yourself in the place of you're in the dream, so you get to see her. I think that's also something to really openly process about grief. One of the things that we come to understand in the therapeutic environment is that different cultures process grief differently, and the experience is different, and some of the expectations are different. So when I have, like, clients who have an African-American background, typically they will say that I'm waiting for the person to come to me in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that is that brings a sense of peace to a lot of people, because they begin to feel like if I see them in the dream, I know that they're okay, even though this, you know, this happened. Me seeing them in the dream puts me in a place of peace. Did either of you have that experience or thought process after your loss?
Yeah, I did.
What about you, Tyra? Ask the question again. I have really drifted. My mind, I've really drifted. What was your question again? Have you had the experience where you desired or wanted to see your son in a dream so you could be at peace about the loss? Many African Americans desire
that. Right. And you know what? I can say I actually had a dream shortly after. It was right after his services. So I did have that type of, you know, some peace from, I got a chance to see his face. Mm-hmm. Now, I did not understand wholeheartedly what was going on in the dream, you know what I'm saying? But I did have some peace because I did see his face.
Okay. Now, you know, when we go back to the stages of grief, Elder Shep pointed out that he did have anger. He had feelings of anger. And mm-hmm. he also expressed that he experienced some nightmares, which was the traumatic part of what he experienced. But if we go back to the stages of grief, we know that there's denial, there's anger, there's bargaining, there's the depression, and then we transition to acceptance. So, you know, after your loss, do you remember what your primary stage of grief was, Tyra?
Wow. I'm gonna tell you. I think I was in a form of like some type of survival mode, you know, because I knew that I had to be there for Damani. I had to be there for my youngest son. So I think I took a back burner. It's not I really did. I took a back burner. I was trying to, you know, go to counseling and do the work that way. But, Shamika, I have to tell you, I had a nasty crash, man. And when I crashed, I crashed. It was really bad. I think I put a lot out in the forefront, you know, making it seem like, you know, okay, hey, I'm going through this. And, you know, I'm constantly hearing people saying to me, oh, you're so strong. You know what I'm saying? You're constantly hearing this. And so I think I kept up some form of facade with that.
Yeah, let me ask you this. So do you think that when Elder Shep was talking about how he noticed, when we discussed traumatic grief, he was talking about instances where he noticed that with Black women and their grief, it was a little bit different because if I remember correct, Elder Shep, you said it was like they shift into a place where they did not focus on their grief, and they shift into a place where they just started to take care of everything and everyone around them. Was that the description of what you described? Okay, so it sounds like that's kind of like where you were, Tyra, like the explanation mm-hmm. of what he described of how some women just, you know, they put they compartmentalize that grief and put it on a back burner, and they begin to take care of everything mm-hmm. and everyone around them. It sounds like that is where you were. And we also mm-hmm. discussed the fact that is actually a trauma response, right? It's like you learn how to compartmentalize certain areas of your life because, you know, the last time I had this threat or issue, I had to take care of everything by myself. So it's kind of like how some people respond to certain situations. So, you know, Elder Shep, was there a specific, besides the anger, you know, was there another stage of grief that got a hold of you during the process?
Oh, most definitely. It was denial. Even though I had, you know, went through the process, we had the funeral, I saw her laying there. I think one of the factors is that we lived in South Carolina. She lived in Orlando, and so she lived at a distance. And so even though I went through everything, saw everything, dealt with people, it was almost like a part of my brain turned off, and that part of what I experienced was in a fog, and I just accepted the other part of my brain, just kind of processed it that she's not really gone. She just is not living close to where I am. And so I kind of lived in that place, even though I knew it wasn't the right place to live in, but it was the most comfortable place to be in. And so I allowed that denial to be a part of me for a very long time. And it just felt better to look at it that way. And so definitely denial.
Wow.
Okay.
Let me say something else too, Shamik. You know what? Because I just thought about something else. Because even with the Johnny and just around all of the court stuff, I think part of the reason, and it goes right back to that, I'm taking care of everybody else. I'm even remembering that night, the scenes, as some of my friends came to the house and they breaking down, and I'm grabbing them and I'm supporting everybody else, you know? And, wow, I had to be at a certain place and a certain level, I felt like, to be able to talk with the coroner's office, talking with the police. You know what I'm saying? It was like I had to be his voice. And so at that point in time, I didn't really have the time to grieve. I had to take, even in death, I had to take care of him, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You went into survival mode again. You went into let me take care of everything around me, even though he's not here. I'm still taking care of things on his behalf. Now, the thing about it is also, each of you have children who went through this process of grief. Elder Shep, you went through it with your wife and your children. But can you give us a little bit of insight into how your son responded, Tyra, to the loss? Did you pull out anything, like maybe something you missed or you would have done differently with him through that process?
Yes. With my youngest son, I tried to get him into counseling. And what I did was I tried to utilize a person that I felt was closer to him to talk to him at that time. I think I would have gotten more guidance as to how to get him help, because he ran from it. I mean, it was like he's sitting in the office and it was like he shut down. He didn't want to talk to the person that was counseling him. He was just like, I'll be okay if you just let me out of here. Please let me out of here. So I think I would have probably reached out to somebody more so on a professional level to find out exactly how I could help him, because even with that, it felt like just such a stale mission because I couldn't get help for him.
Well, I think the thing to consider in that is, remember, one of the things we talked about was absent grief and also delayed grief. So I think you have to take into consideration not everybody's grief process is going to be the same. So while your son did have that experience, maybe his grief onset was a little bit delayed, and there could have possibly not been a need to address anything at that particular time, because you did give him the outlet to explore it, but it seems like that was something he was just like not ready to deal with that. And I would think he's a young man. You know, we have to consider traditionally how we view men And even what we teach young boys about manhood, like, you know, they do not primarily learn how to express emotion. So that must have been very difficult for him. So I wouldn't say that, you know, you did anything that was not, you know, wrong or should not have been done. But I think in consideration of his feelings at that time, maybe he was experiencing absent or delayed grief at that time, and maybe he needed to process it at a different time or even in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So, Elder Shep, you saw your wife and your children go through this. What was your experience with your family when it came to processing their grief?
Well, my son and my daughter grieved very differently. My daughter grieved initially when they both went with us to Orlando. They both got the news the same time we did. They both experienced other families that were going through the same crisis at the same time. And so all the information that we were getting, they were getting. My daughter cried. My son, he sponged up all the information, observed all of the grief that was going on all around him, but he was emotionless. And every ounce of information that was given from that time until the time of the funeral, he absorbed it, but he didn't process it or he didn't release it. Up until the day of the funeral, during the funeral, he had a real meltdown where he hyperventilated, couldn't breathe, and he was like dead weight. We were trying to move him from the front row to another place, trying to get him some water. He had just had this meltdown that wasn't really a tearful expression, but like a check valve that couldn't take any more pressure type release. But even after that, he had to go out of the country to school and had to get counseling immediately because of where he was personally versus my daughter.
And that sounds like he bottled a lot of stuff up and it just like a pressure point, it exploded.
Yes. And he is still like that in everything. You know, his anxieties are a little higher, but that's how he processed it. But unlike me, he got counseling while he was in school. And I think that helped him a bunch. Yeah.
Okay.
My daughter didn't get counseling immediately. She went to college. And she started, it was very hard for her to get through the first semester because the workload and the experience all collided at the same time. And so it was very difficult for us to help walk her through and talk her through that semester. And she did not return to school that next semester. And so I think that was because she didn't get the initial counseling that she needed to get.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sounds like they still kind of they grieve along kind of some of the similar grief lines and I think that we also have to consider age and emotional intellect and awareness when it comes to grief with younger people, young adults, because maybe they just weren't in the space to be able to do a lot of emotional expression. Elder Shep, did you notice that there was maybe a difference between how your wife grieved and how you grieved? Because, you know, men, like we said, men will minimize the feelings. They go into a problem-solving mode, and they express their emotions in an internal reflective way. Do you see, like, in any areas, was your wife different in that, in her grief process?
My wife was a different person completely. Her grief, if you could measure it on a scale of 1 to 10, it started like Tyra. Now Tyra was interesting because she had no one, minimum help in her situation, so she had to do a lot. My wife is normally a strong person, And so she started out in the first part of the grief process very strong, sure, but then, you know, 3-4 months down the road, it imploded on her, and she lost maybe 30, 40 pounds. Her body shook like a nervous shake, like she was losing her mind. She couldn't remember anything. She didn't do normal things that she did, like cook, clean. Those were things that if you put something down, she's going to pick it up. All of those characteristics that she had went away. Her physical body was changing. Her mental condition was changing. It was like a different person in the house.
It sounds like did you guys take note of how each other like processed through that whole cycle of grief, where you were able to openly communicate to each other? Like, was she able to say to you, maybe you're not saying how you're feeling, and were you able to say to her, sweetheart, I think you're spiraling. Let's figure out how to help each other. Like, were you able to communicate through that?
There were attempts, but the communication wasn't very well. Wasn't good communication, even though it was attempt. There was concern, but the questions that needed to be asked wasn't asked. And then for me, I felt like if I distanced myself a little bit from the kids and from my wife, if it happens again, it wouldn't be as painful. So that was in the back of my mind while we all were going through the same thing. But that communication gap of trying to put, you know, an answer to what I saw, or trying to discover or find an answer to what I saw, neither one of us could articulate it.
Yeah. You know, communication after the loss of a child seems to be a very difficult thing for many couples. You know, like there's, you know, instances where a couple will lose a child, whether it's an adult or a young child, and years later they're divorcing because it just becomes such a difficult battle to communicate and to openly express and support each other. So you see that a lot when parents lose children. So, you know, I thank God that you guys were able to, you know, go through your process mm-hmm. but still remain strong enough for each other to be able to, you know, still stand in support of each other. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
So it sounds like each of you and your family system, you did seek out clinical therapy. However, I want to know, what was your support system like for each side of this? You know, Tyra, you have, I believe you have, you know, your mom, your siblings, and so do you. And Eldership, you know, you guys have an extended family. But Tyra, tell me what your support system was looking like beyond therapy.
Wow. Where my mom was involved, she really didn't want to talk about what had happened. And I think part of it is because she felt some guilt in the fact that, you know, she placed a phone call. She had no idea that they were going to come to the house and murder my son. So there was no outlet there to really discuss anything. So that was a support system there. And as far as with my oldest son, by him being locked up, you know, I could only talk to him, you know, when he called. But then when he called, again, it was like I think part of me kind of felt guilty at the fact that he sounded like, okay, well, you're not crying, you know, like, you know, what's going on here? You know, why are you not crying? Why are you not, you know, in this particular place? But I'm trying to be strong for him. With my youngest son, I found myself running from having any discussion with him because I felt like it was going to cause him to have a meltdown. I felt like he couldn't take it. So I really couldn't, as much as I wanted him to try to open up, I wanted to try to fix his pain because I could see it, you know. I really didn't have that outlet. And so then afterwards, you know, he left and went in the military. And so there would be times that we would talk, and as bad as I wanted to address it, or it was a lot of times our conversations were being spoken. So it was like he would call when it was a Johnny's birthday, and then, you know, on the date of when it happened, and it's the unspoken, you know, he's quiet, or he may just say, well, I just called because I just wanted to see how you were doing today. Well, I understood, you know, exactly what that was. So it wasn't too much of a support there. Now, as far as with my sibling, I really didn't have that much conversation there with him about it. I did have family members that, you know, that was there, but to me, it was hard to try to translate what's happening or what's going on to someone that really has no clue. You know what I'm saying? They're not in the house. So even though there may have been, like, some of the outlets that was there, it was I really couldn't communicate that to them, if that makes any sense. You know, mm-hmm. I had a couple of friends that I could actually – you know, maybe talk to, but even in that, it wasn't understood. Now, for me, another person who had actually had that loss, this may sound crazy, but it's like the unspoken. You know that they know exactly how you feel, so you're able to open up to them a lot more.
Okay, so you sought solace in someone with a similar experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my question is, do you think, like, because I think that it's a challenging thing to have a traumatic experience where your loss is connected to police. So do you think that mm-hmm. was probably a factor in the lack of support? Because people, I guess they just don't know what to say in certain instances when there's, you know, police involvement in a situation where someone is murdered. So do you think that was possibly a contributor to, I don't know how to discuss this with you, because I know, you know, a whole
right.
lot of people, Tyra, so I'm thinking your support system would have been a large number of people. But do you think the circumstances
yeah.
limited that networking and that strength of support?
Absolutely. I really do, because here's the other factor to that, too, and until you, when you just said that, it kind of hit a home run. I had to be careful of what I said, you know, because we were still looking at going through, you know, proceedings, you know what I'm saying? So, so there would have been people probably a lot more that I would have been able to talk to, but I couldn't, because even in an instance like that, with so much stuff going on, you know, around the murder and being, you know, a police-involved shooting, you know, I really didn't know who I could and couldn't trust. So I really had to be very selective in what I did say and who I did talk to, you know. And so even with the counseling that I did from the VA perspective, I had to really watch what I said. So I really couldn't be that open and trustworthy.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. So, Eldership, what about you and your family? Who was a part of your support system beyond your son, your daughter, and your wife? Who did you guys pull in for support and strength?
Oh, wow. The dynamics behind that is a spider web of complexities. Of course, my parents were always supportive. I think it was hard to watch them want to help us, but just didn't know what they could do. I think they felt a little hopeless in, you know, trying to be there for us, because there was so much that we had to deal with. And so when this incident happened, basically there was so much press around it that there was a large number of my family, well, our family, mostly Andrea's family, who were very active with the press, with their information and things like that, and some of mine as well. But what I found is that whatever the press release in things like this, they grab it to be a truth, you know, and, you know, as a result of those things, they have their opinions about the incident, how it happened, and the relationships are, in some cases, still strained from that. Because one of the things that the press released was some of the pledges from that they were pledging all around the world to give to the victims and the family of the victims were an enormous amount of money in pledge, but most of the families did not receive a lot of what they said they were going to give them. And so but if the media said it, your family believe it, and there is this strain because you know how we are as a culture, and as a result of those things, I think they believe that there was a tremendous benefit for us through all of this somehow. And but so our initial and even long-term support systems were trying to grieve while trying to, at the same time, maintain a family structure that ignorance was trying to cripple.
And I think we see that a lot when it comes to public grief, you know, the entertainment factor that we talked about, like where we like just run from one thing to the next. And it sounds like that, you know, when Bianca passed, that was the news thing of the hour. And people immediately shift into, let me get what I can get out of this situation, because they know people are going to respond financially to their sympathy and empathy about the situation. So it sounds like for both of you, you were placed in a position that you had to be thoughtful about who you were allowing to support. Because if you just opened yourself up to support from anyone, you were also opening yourself up to be hurt by that support, which is a very isolating feeling, I would think.
Yes, it is. It is.
Mm-hmm.
And a very
hurtful feeling
because these are people that you love, and they have a form of grief, and they are grieving. You know, but there were comments that were made like, we're grieving just as much as you. And
right.
And, you know, though it's probable, it's possible, it's not probable.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like,
right.
you're grieving,
right.
But like, this is of my body. I think I feel this one. I feel this one magnified a little bit more than you may be feeling it. Yeah, and that becomes a factor because it becomes a look at me moment. You know, you don't really get your moment of saying, let me pull back and grieve, because so many people are looking to be, you know, highlighted in that grief. Oh, I lost my niece, or I lost my nephew, or I lost this person. And it's just like, you know, you have to sit back and let them have their moment for the camera. And it could feel, I guess it's not only isolating, but it's, like you said, hurtful, and it's damaging to relationships in the long run.
In the long run, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I want to know, you both have shifted very firmly from anger and denial, and just, you know, that whole grief stage. You both seem like you have shifted into acceptance of, you know, this is my loss, and I am going to do something that is worthy of, you know, the memory of my child. But tell me, Tyra, what helped you shift into acceptance of your loss?
I really believe, I mean, and this is no I think people who really know me, they know that I don't do, like, the fluff stuff. But I think what helped me shift was reaching out for that counseling. In the very, I'm telling you, that day when Elder Shep broke that thing down to me about the parts of you grieving, it just helped me see things totally from a different lens, as I might say. It helped me see it from a different lens. And the one thing that I did know also was that I could not be at a place to where I couldn't function because I had other people dependent on me. So I had to go to a place of acceptance and now what do I do next? Because even though I was angry and mad, and there are times where I still, you know, may have those feelings, but I knew that I could not stay there. Does it make sense? Did I answer what you were asking?
Yeah, you shifted because you had to. You were forced to.
Right.
Is that what you? That's what you're saying. So, sounds like you kind of come full circle in that area, Tyra. Is that you made your grief? You processed it in convenience. You didn't really process every stage at different times because you had to shift for convenience to acceptance. So it's one of those things, like, we talk about how to take care of yourself through this process. So I think that even though you are, you know, a few years down the road from, you know, that particular incident, I think that you still have to consider, you still have to really be thoughtful about your grief process and your grief stages. You are now in a position where your grief doesn't have to be convenient for others. You know what I'm saying? So it sounds like, right. While you went through different stages, it was just so compartmentalized that you still have to really dig deep and explore all those different aspects of it.
Absolutely. I can't argue with that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even now, as you know, listening, yeah, I went through, different seasons. And the thing about it is grief is a lifelong process. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't just, you can't go with how you have people who I think that have never, I don't know, maybe they haven't experienced grief at certain levels, but just some of the things, how people feel like, You should handle it. Oh, well, that happened X, Y, Z time ago. But no, but to the parent that lost their child, I mean, to me, there's things that triggers that it just happens. You know, when I get the letters in the mail that has a Johnny's name on it and you can start school now and you will graduate here, well, that won't happen for him. You know what I'm saying? You know, When I get those type of letters, I mean, that's a trigger for me. And so I have to maneuver as to how I'm going to process through this letter that I just got. You know, because this is a thing that you're sending to him for him to get ready to start the school, and he won't be able to do that.
Yeah. Elder Shep, what helped you shift to acceptance?
It was really a slow move or a slow fade to acceptance. What I realized in the process is that I'm not the only one who have experienced this and will experience it in the future. And so as I was fading to acceptance, I was learning and considering, I think we both were, how can we help someone that was in our shoes? Now, so our mind was fading to acceptance, but the strength to do it wasn't there. And so the more education we got, the more counseling we got, the more we were able to, let's say, deal with the grief or confront the grief through counseling or what have you, we also began to gain strength to accept it and to do something about it. And so for me, if I can do something about what I've learned, what I've experienced to help someone else, I can better accept what I had to go through. And so I think that's, it was a slow fade, you know. It didn't happen overnight, even though we knew at some point things were going to change and shift. And also watching Tyra go through what she went through, and really being up at night praying for her situation, I didn't know the things to tell her. I knew the questions to ask and what to say because the Lord said, okay, ask this question and she's going to say this, you know, and just genuinely praying for her and seeing what she was going through. Even in that process, I saw this platform from there. And that helped me to see the platform where we are because I saw it in someone else and I believed that she was going to get to this place. And now I'm experiencing the same thing. And so it was a slow fade to get here. You know, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Okay, so Elder Shep, you get the last question of the evening.
Okay.
And I want to give you this question because this is our target group, because women typically grieve openly. They find support, but men typically don't. They internalize. So what would you say to a man experiencing any type of loss, any type of loss that you can think of, divorce, loss of employment, loss of family member, loss of child? What would you say to a man going through the grief process?
You're not invincible. You're human. Your gender happens to be a male gender, but your emotions are fragile. As strong as you may be, your emotions are fragile. It has to be placed somewhere. It has to be released, or it will destroy you and everything that you've worked so hard to accomplish. It will destroy your relationships. It would destroy your relationship with your family. It would destroy your relationship with God if you don't understand that you're human and that you aren't as strong in areas as you think you are. And there's nothing wrong with releasing some of that. And if it means, I know I spend many days, you know, at the gravesite, you know, and I'm the only one that do that. And I have conversations, you know, and it may be crazy to other people, but find your way to release some of what you're going through individually, and then find your way to express some of what you're going through to your family. And each time you do that, you're going to gain a strength and a fortitude that you didn't know you were able to gain. And trust God. If you don't have a relationship with God, it's going to be very difficult. You know, faith has been a big factor in me getting to where I am now. And so those are things that you have to learn how to release.
Amen.
Oh, wow. That's good. That's good. I mean, wow, that's good. Well, y'all, it is that time. It's time to close out. I got to get to the airport so I can get back to South Carolina. I thank you so much, Shamik and Elder Shep. I thank you, Shamik, for just holding the conversation on the differences in how men and women grieve. And the one thing I can truly say, man, I'm grateful because there's always work to do. There's always more and more work to do. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both. Shamik, do you have anything else that you want to say before we go ahead and close out?
Well, I just want to thank you for being, you guys for being awesome co-hosts and also opening up your heart to people who may be experiencing the same thing that you are. It's not a very easy process to go through. It can be very difficult. So I just want to thank both of you for being so open with your sharing today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Pressure Points Unpacked. We're live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I invite you to please log back in on us on next Tuesday as well, as we close out the month of August. Again, this is Pressure Points Unpacked. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. If you have any questions, anything that you would like for us to discuss, please hit me up and let me know. This is Pressure Points Unpacked. I'm your host, Tyra Little, and I will see you next week.